I want to tell you about a fascinating new book about recent Chicago history. It was written by Forrest Claypool, and there's somebody we're all familiar with. He was chief executive officer of the Chicago Park District. He also ran the CTA and the Chicago Public Schools and was the chief of staff to Mayor Richard M. Daley in his first and third terms. He is the author of a new book, The Daley Show, Inside the Transformative Reign of Chicago's Richard M. Daley. Forrest, I love this book, and I was thinking, doesn't it surprise you that there aren't more books about Richard M. Daley at this point?
Yeah, Bob, thanks for having me. That's a good question. I felt like I was motivated to write it, really, because looking back, 15 years, and what's happened in the city since, sort mm-hmm. of the decline of the city, I think people kind of have lost the lessons learned from those years and kind of forgotten what Chicago was like in 1989 when Daley became mayor, and what happened after that, and then sort of what's happened since he left office. And there's a lot of lessons there, I think, for people who care about cities and the importance of cities.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. The book actually starts following Richard M. Daley after his father's death in 1976. And you write about what you term a pretty remarkable personal and political transformation, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Don Clark Netsch, who was a state senator and independent during those years when Daley was a state senator and his father was still mayor, called him Dirty Little Richie. And Chicago Magazine, said he was put him on the list of top 10 worst senators for his shark-like qualities and living off his father's name and manipulating others. And he sort of had a reputation as a shallow bully. When his father died, though, he was kind of cast into the wilderness, especially after Jane Byrne was elected and started firing all of his allies. And he also, about the same time, he had a son who was born with spina bifida and only lived 3 years. And he would fly home every night to sit by his bedside from Springfield, and that deepened his empathy. And I think the combination of all those things, where he was suddenly no longer a prince in waiting, but suddenly someone who had to deal with these tragedies and this adversity, it really did change him fundamentally. And he became, shockingly, a reformer and passed landmark reform legislation on mental health and nursing home reforms in Springfield in concert with Netsch and her other liberal allies, and things like repealing the food tax on the sales tax on food and medicine and things like that. So it really began a remarkable political transformation that began a path towards to reclaiming the family throne, so to speak.
Yeah, I always thought he fooled a lot of people in different ways. You'd be around him, and then you'd be surprised at his taste in art and architecture, and yeah. Also he had a terrific sense of fun and humor. And I remember him telling me at one point when it was clear he was not going to run again that it wasn't fun for him. He was a guy who did like to have fun. Did you find him that way? I imagine working with him was, no picnic, but he did have a great lighter side, didn't he?
He did, and he loved being mayor. He really did. And you mentioned things that people don't fully appreciate, like his architectural sense and his urban planning vision, which I think was on full display in places like Millennium Park, which was one of his great creations, obviously. For example, he was on the committee, for example, that reviewed all these artist applications for the park, and he was the most loud advocate for the Bean. He said that will rival the Picasso in terms of its impact, and of course that underestimated it. So he had a real sense, I think, of things like that.
He inherited a divided city, but as President Obama said, he brought this city together in a way that a lot of people didn't imagine could be done. Why doesn't he get more credit for that?
I think, the memories are short. People just, we live in a time now that is where people don't remember what happened more than 15 minutes ago, and it's just the pace of change and technology is so dramatic. I think people have forgotten, and they need to be reminded. My high school history teacher told me that the only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. But I think we need to, and I think, it's one of the motives for writing this book. I think people should remember, in 1989, this was a terribly racially divided city. It was called Beirut on the Lake by the Wall Street Journal because of the racial strife and the council wars where white aldermen under Ed Verdoliak were fighting the first black mayor, and there was just incredible racial tensions and dysfunction which hurt the city. And Daley ran on a platform of racial reconciliation, and he was true to his word once elected, and he brought people together in ways that, as you pointed out, no one thought really possible. And that was really foundational. Without that fundamental shift in culture, none of the other accomplishments of his tenure could have happened.
Violent crime went way down during his time as mayor. Was that just a national trend at that time?
It was certainly a national trend, but as I point out in the book, the amount that crime, violent crime, descended in Chicago was significantly greater than in the country as a whole. So he definitely, his strategies here clearly were nation-leading along with New York's, and made the city, you know, remarkably safer. And again, in contrast to today, where we, you know, lead the nation every year in multi-victim shootings and carjackings and other things, it was an important accomplishment that began to bring businesses and middle class families back into city life.
This is some kind of book, and every Chicagoan will be interested in this. Forrest Claypool, hold on, because there's more to get to, especially the parking meter deal. And the book is The Daley Show, Inside the Transformative Reign of Chicago's Richard M. Daley. We're talking with the longtime chief of staff to Mayor Richard M. Daley, Forrest Claypool, about his new book, The Daley Show, Inside the Transformative Reign of Chicago's Richard M. Daley. Forrest, talk about working with him on a day-to-day basis. What was he like, and how was the public Daley different from the private man?
Yeah, they really were kind of one and the same. I think he wore his emotions on his sleeve and his love of the city on his sleeve, and I think people saw that, and they saw that in many, many manifestations, including when there were, you know, family issues and other things. He was who you kind of thought he was, and he cared deeply about the city, and he was the demanding boss. I mean, he was certainly someone who was sometimes difficult to work with, but he was always focused on how can we move the city ahead. And if you showed you could run with a football, he would let you do it and not interfere. So I thought in that sense, he was a strong manager when he had good people. Later in his tenure, some of the quality of the people around him, I think was less, and it affected, caused some of the scandals and other things that blemished his reign. But I think that was one of his great strengths, particularly early on.
You write about his BS meter, and it sounds like it was pretty sensitive. He didn't get fooled a lot, did he?
No, that's one of the advantages of sophistication. He grew up obviously at the knee of the master, and then had his own innate understanding. I said, of the everyman, he really did relate to the everyman in a way that was remarkably unerring, and had a real sympathetic and empathetic connection there. And I think that manifested itself over and over in how he handled his politics and what he did. And that was a tremendous, tremendous strength.
His outsourcing, privatization of the Skyway and the Grant Park Garage seemed to work well. It was praised, and not so much the parking meter deal. what was the problem there? What went wrong?
Yeah, well, the context, of course, which we should remember, is the Great Recession. And in Washington, they started printing money in order to fight the deflationary forces. But Daley didn't have that luxury, so he passed a record tax increase and laid off 1,000 people. But even after that, they had a budget deficit the size of the fire department, and that was multi-years. So I think what his idea was, well, we're going to go where we've had success before, and we'll sell these parking meters, and it'll get us through this economic storm. But unfortunately, the way parking meters is not the same thing as a parking garage or a Skyway, and it was crafted in such a way that really not only disadvantaged the city, but it was a botched rollout. So it created so much incredible frustration from people who were getting parking tickets for, they put in the quarters and the thing wouldn't print out the receipt, and all kinds of debacle, classic debacle that people, began to view symbolically. And I think people were in an honorary mood anyway because of the Great Recession. And so they began to look at this as a symbol of perhaps arrogance and governance, and that maybe perhaps Daley had stayed too long, and his standing plummeted to about 35% approval at that time, which was really remarkable given how popular he was before the Great Recession.
But you think he may eventually be vindicated here, don't you?
Well, I'm not sure. I think the deal was obviously still, even looking back, a pretty bad deal. The only thing I point out is that it was an 80-year lease, and if there's between Uber and Lyft and ride sharing and driverless cars, which are on the horizon, it actually might end up looking prescient remarkably, because they shifted all the risk of all those years to a company, and now technology may make urban parking a thing of the past. But that remains to be seen. I think until that happens, I think people can accurately say that was a terrible deal.
He did, as you write, rebuild a downtown that was really in trouble, and he really did some great work with the schools. But was his big failure what he neglected to do with the police department?
Well, that was certainly a stain on his legacy, is his failure to investigate the evidence of the torture, police torture, systematic torture at Area 2 under Commander John Burge. And it took decades, really, to unravel that scandal. And I think that certainly is a stain, that he did not follow those breadcrumbs to they were increasingly evident that there was an issue there. Scandals in general, just as his father, suffered scandals, he also had scandals. And I think that was another factor that showed kind of weaknesses. But in each instance, no one had ever accused him of benefiting financially from those scandals, which are, hired truck and the hiring fraud and things that occurred later in his tenure. But nonetheless, those are certainly what I call the warts that are covered in the book in great detail. And I try to explain how that happens, too. Those scandals happened when he was riding the highest, when he had the greatest popularity and power, and it sort of underscores Lord Acton's old maxim, that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think it's not a surprise that, he ran into those scandals when he was not being challenged by anyone. And I think unchallenged power tends to pull government towards corruption, and I think there's very clear lessons in his mayoralty from that as well.
I'd like to talk to you a little more about this, and if you're willing to hold on through the 9 o'clock news, I would love to get to a little bit more. It's such a fascinating book, The Daley Show, Inside the Transformative Reign of Chicago's Richard M. Daley. I think for anyone who grew up here or has come to our city in the last 10 or 20 years, this is such a terrific read. Forrest Claypool. WGN. Want the real story behind the Chicago headlines we all remember? You got to read this book called The Daley Show, Inside the Transformative Reign of Chicago's Richard M. Daley. The author is Forrest Claypool, familiar name around here. He was the chief of staff to Mayor Richard M. Daley in his first and third terms, went on to work with Rahm Emanuel as well. Forrest, one of the things I miss about Mayor Daley, as I see the press conferences today with Mayor Johnson, and everybody's screaming at each other in a bad mood, or the mayor's not answering questions, it's not a lot of fun. Those press conferences with Mayor Daley oftentimes were quite entertaining, weren't they?
They sure were. I mean, and he was, including for some of his malapropisms, which he was like his father. He's like his father. Mike Royko said about the old man Daley that he never exited from the same paragraph he entered. And sometimes that was the case with Rich, too.
Yeah, but there were some laughs in those press conferences back in the day, always. That's what I miss.
Yeah, there was a lot of interaction with the reporters.
Right.
I think there were those. Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned the power of that office before we hit the break there, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that, because you write how effective political leadership relies on an unapologetic use of power, but wielding that power without challenge leads to corruption. Talk about that, and isn't that the only way to get things done, to use that power?
I think so, and I think people need to understand that, I think, to a degree. that since time immemorial, the tools of power in the mayor's office have been contracts and jobs. And, you know, even though there were scandals related to those late in his tenure, the truth is those tools can be used, you know, in ways that are perfectly legal and appropriate to strengthen political coalitions and to help you pass legislation and get things done. And that's exactly what Mayor Daley did. And it was really critical to helping him rebuild the city, but also to protect against rear guard actions by the state legislature. You know, that the mayor needs to hold together people in the city to protect the city. I mean, a good example is when Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who was a rookie politician, she went down to Springfield, and the teachers union and the firefighters union and others passed bills to lard on billions in new pension liabilities on taxpayers and take control of the schools away from the mayor, and not a single member of the Chicago delegation stood with her because she really didn't have anything to offer. And so they took their cues from powerful special interest groups who had money and troops and other things that a more sophisticated and powerful mayor would have provided and protected the city. And that's just a good example of why, you know, the mayor of Chicago has to have a sophisticated use of tools of power in order to do what's necessary and also to protect the city's interests.
Was Mayor Daley's big disappointment Northerly Island? He famously took care of Meg's Field one night. Northerly Island, though, never worked out the way he envisioned, did it?
No, and Chicago Magazine says it's a ratty park stuck in development purgatory. Despite all the political capital he spent, including the notorious midnight raid on Meg's to carve X's in the runways to close the airport, that was all part of his 10-year goal to turn that into a beautiful park. It never came to be. But he had some consolation prizes, obviously. The museum campus was an extraordinary engineering feat that united the three museums, the Adler, the Shed, and the Field, on a campus of sort of rolling greensward there that used to be divided, people may remember, by expressways. And in addition to that, of course, we all remember Millennium Park, which was an extraordinary accomplishment that really defines the city, will define the city for generations.
I think in the end, feel quite positively about your old boss, despite his errors and misjudgments. You quote Joni Mitchell's song in your epilogue, "Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone?" And that's how you feel, isn't it?
It is, and I think looking back 15 years from now, many of us can see that more clearly. I think when he left office, he was not popular. You know, the economy was at a nadir. There were issues, and he was blamed for a lot of those problems, I think, unfairly. I think looking back 15 years and seeing how much of the progress that he made over a quarter century has been gradually undone, at the schools and in terms of crime and jobs and quality of life, the reemergence of graffiti and homeless shelters, I mean, homeless encampments and other, other indications of decline. People have a better sense of, what is now missing. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is that there are lessons there. It was obviously Mayor Daley was a gifted politician and very skilled, but he also pursued policies promoting job growth and quality of life that any urban leader can adopt and pursue. And I think if you care about cities, and I've always believed cities drive human progress, you should understand those lessons, because we want healthy cities. We don't want cities in decline.
One more question for you, Forrest. You didn't interview Mayor Daley. How come?
Well, I didn't want this to be his version of history. I wanted it to be drawn from the public record and from the recollections of those who worked for him, against him, people like yourself who observed up close him as journalists, as activists, as civic leaders. And it's really their stories that the book really, I think, gives the book richness. It's the remembrances, the observations, the commentary of all the people who are part of the dramas of his quarter century in office that I think provides some of the most interesting behind the scenes anecdotes and stories that bring to life what actually happened, and especially in the context of Chicago's, bare knuckle politics and the complexity of running a major, international metropolis.
It's a great book, and it's something that every Chicagoan needs to have. The Daily Show Inside the Transformative Arena of Chicago's Richard M. Daley, Forrest Claypool. Congratulations on this. It's really, really some great history, recent history, Forrest. Thank you for the time this morning.
Thank you, Bob, for having me. I really appreciate it.